It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Great panel for you. A couple of new first-timers. Ant Pruitt from Tech Republic, from the Code Breaker podcast, Ben Johnson, and, of course, Philip Elmer DeWitt. We're going to talk about what else? What Apple's going to do on Tuesday? What happened with Equifax? Oh, my gosh. And we'll maybe mention a little bit about Google, Android, Facebook, you know, the usual. It's time for TWiT. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 631, recorded Sunday, September 10th, 2017. This one's for Jerry. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Qualcomm's Snapdragon Gigabit LTE. To learn more about fiber optic download speeds on a smartphone, go to snapdragon.com/gigabit. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you looking to hire a tech professional? With ZipRecruiter, you can post to 100-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter free at ziprecruiter.com/twit. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software used by over 10 million people. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/twit. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code TWIT to save 20% on any order. It's time for TWIT. This Week in Tech, the show where we get together with some of the smartest people in technology, the tech journalists par excellence, to talk about the week's tech news, and in this case, a little bit about what's ahead. Philip Elmer DeWitt is here, the senior elder statesman of Macintosh journalism. I'm sorry, Phil.
Getting older every... I was 68 this week.
Wow.
So I'm really getting
old. Wow. Yeah. That is old. PED30 is his blog, PED30.com, and you can follow him on the Twitter. He's Philip with one L. Philip PED, or Philip Ed. And you're getting ready to go to the Apple event on Tuesday, so we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. I want to welcome two new members to our TWIT team, and I'm thrilled to have them. I've been fans for a long time of both. Ben Johnson is here. You've seen him on Marketplace. He was a tech editor there. He's the creator of the Codebreaker podcast, and you may remember we were in hot pursuit of Codebreaker for the Webby. You got the People's Choice Award.
We shared it.
A handful
of
votes.
It was a friendly competition. We loved it.
Great to have you, Ben. Why is your Twitter handle the Brock Johnson? Who's this Brock Johnson that we talk of?
Well, Brock is my middle name, but you know, for a long time, my nickname was, you know, the Brock Johnson because of our next president, Dwayne the Rock Johnson. So, you know,
you're the B version of the Rock.
Yeah, that's right.
I get it. Anyway, great to have you. I ran into Ben at the podcast movement, the big podcast conference. I'm sure they'll edit all that out and fix this in post. No, in Anaheim a few weeks ago, and it was great to see you. And I thought we got to get you on the show, so I'm thrilled to have you.
Thanks for having me. Big, longtime fan, first time caller.
Thank you. And you'll have some announcements on Monday about the new thing, because Molly Wood has taken over your role at Marketplace, which is great.
Yes. Molly Wood. We love her. I don't think that's her Twitter handle, but yeah.
Her Twitter handle is perfect. Good. It's Molly Wood, which is perfect. You know, Hollywood with an M. Also thrilled to welcome Ant Pruitt, who has been on, of course, TNT many times. He's a writer at Tech Republic, photographer, and a famous drone flyer. Ant, great to have you.
Hey, thank you, Mr. LaPorte. I really, really appreciate you having me.
He's got a Clemson Tiger behind him, so I have a feeling we know where his sympathies lie. It's great to have you. I also see a line drawing of somebody. Is that you or is that your dad?
That is me. One of my great friends, readers, followers over in Sweden. She drew that well as another one on my wall. And it's just, she's so talented, and it really warmed my heart to have someone send that to me. And I want to apologize for my voice for the listeners, because as you said, I'm a Tiger fan and I actually go to the games and I yell. So I'm going to sound a little bit like Barry White.
But actually,
I will try to soothe it with some whiskey.
Good thinking. People don't know Ant is actually a tenor. So I have to start, I'm sorry to say, on a sad note, and I think people are starting to just learn the news. One of our longtime friends, a man who's been on Twit 20 times, we did two triangulations with him, the great science fiction author Jerry Pournelle, passed away on Friday. Jerry went to Dragon Con in Atlanta, had a great time. His son Alex wrote on the Chaos Manor blog that Jerry, you know, had a wonderful time at Dragon Con. He felt a little ill, maybe the flu or a cold, and came home. And on Friday, he passed away quietly and without pain. And so we're very sorry to lose Jerry Pournelle, an inspiration for my career with his Chaos Manor column in Byte magazine. The first, as best we can tell, first guy ever to write a novel on a computer. He wrote many great science fiction novels, including some with Larry Niven that are absolute classics, like The Moat in God's Eye and Lucifer's Hammer. And I want to thank our team who jumped on this and pulled some clips from Jerry's many appearances on our shows, and we made a little kind of tribute reel to Jerry Pournelle. Our guest today is somebody that I've been a fan of literally for years, ever since his column in Byte magazine, and he's certainly influenced my career. Let's welcome Jerry Pournelle.
A lot of people couldn't figure out why in the world was I better known than anybody else in the computer business, except maybe Dvorak. I wrote the Field and Stream column. Me and Joe went hunting. Well, me and old Zeke went compute. And that was the great secret I never told anybody.
Great many, if not most, scientists were heavily influenced by sci-fi and focused their research on areas that science fiction inspired them to study, which is why, in so many ways, modern scientific advances parallel what you guys are writing about.
When you get around to listening to The Moat in God's Eye, pay attention to the pocket computer. I wrote that in 1972, and an iPhone does most of what it says in there. But, of course, we had to set it a long way away, because even in 1972, nobody thought that I would live to see.
Isn't it amazing?
Most of the people in this world accept fruits of technology in about the same way as a kitten accepts milk when you pour it into a bowl for it. There was a common phrase in the robot industry, you never understand how smart a moron is until you try to program a robot. It towards the end of the Soviet Union, and Panovich, which was doing the handwriting recognition software for Microsoft, she said, my biggest problem is I don't have enough technical handwriting. Then I got my logbook out, you know, that's the technical handwriting that was the standard, and that engine has been in every edition of a Microsoft handwriting recognition program since 1990.
How is your handwriting, Jerry? Are you?
It's god awful.
Okay, great.
It's really terrible. X projects are this: go out to some place like Edwards or some awful place where nobody wants to be. Go out there and you tell them, I want you to build the best whatever it is you can build with technology as of this afternoon. You build three copies of it. We test one to the edge of it, and we probably prang it. With the second one, we fly in because we learned from the first until we get all the information out of it. And the third one ends up in the Smithsonian.
Jerry's the wordy one. Yes.
Larry has told a perfectly good story. It would be publishable now. But when I'm finished with it, it will be probably half again, maybe twice as long, and then he goes over it and finds some scene that everybody will remember, and they'll forget that I ever had any part in it. What the hell? I've always been an operations research guy, you know. That's a guy who knows less and less about more and more until he knows nothing at all about everything.
One last question. You ever going to write your memoir?
Maybe, although in a sense I'm writing it now, aren't I?
Maybe after a year or two we'd have the whole thing. No, maybe take a little longer than that.
How many people do you know whose personal computer has been on display in the Smithsonian?
You're the only one I know of.
Yeah, probably all of them, yeah.
I know all of them. great Dr. Jerry Pournelle. It was an honor to consider him a friend. We'll miss him. Thank you, Jerry. And Godspeed. On to the tech news of the week. And I guess Tuesday's the big day. You're coming out, Philip Elmer DeWitt, for the event. I'm very jealous because this will be the first event Apple will hold at its new Apple Park campus in the aptly named Steve Jobs Theater.
Yeah, and I've got to apologize for what's going to be a humble brag, you know, where you say, geez, I went to the White House and all I got was these stupid matches. So there was, I got wind, like everybody else, that it was probably going to be September 12th, and I start worrying about airline prices going up.
Because they never tell you ahead of time. They give you as little warning as possible.
Right, but there was some, you know, you could sort of start putting it together. They weren't going to do it the day after Labor Day, and I think maybe the Wall Street Journal leaked it. So I bought my tickets, and I rented my car, and I arranged a place to stay. And then the invitations came out, and I didn't get one.
Oh.
So I spent, I don't know, 12 hours, first of all, feeling horrible and forgotten and unloved. And then I started composing in my mind the story about trying to guess which Apple exec I had so pissed off that they had dropped me off the list. And then I thought, rather than do that, why don't I just reach out to my friend who's the head of PR and see if, you know, and I wrote him. I said, you know, maybe it was an oversight. And he said, yeah, maybe it was. And he sent me an invite. So
I have to feel they kept a few extras for the people like you who they missed. I hope so.
I think they zeroed out a list.
It started from scratch,
Waited to see who screamed the loudest.
In the Steve Jobs Theater, but according to their environmental impact report, this is a tidbit, only three. I don't know why this is in the EIR. Don't worry, no more than 350 journalists will ever be allowed on the campus at the same time.
Is that what
it says? Yes. So there weren't that many seats. There were only 350 seats. I didn't get invited, but I didn't expect to get invited. Rene Ritchie, who is one of our hosts on MacBreak Weekly, will be there. I think a couple of people from his publication, imore.com, will be there. But it's, you know, I think increasingly Apple wants to save those seats for Apple staff. Because
they need a certain volume because there are these applause lines.
Exactly.
And if it's just a room full of journalists, there'll be silence because, you know, the tradition is you're not there to cheerlead. You're there to type. Right?
Yeah.
So they need a certain amount of them. And then there's the Al Gores of the world.
Well, he's on the board. I'm sure every member of the board of directors gets to go. Although I don't think I've ever seen Woz at an Apple event. Have you?
I don't think I have.
No. Yeah, Ant, are you going?
That would be no, sir.
I like the laugh. How about you, Ben? Did you get your invitation or is it stuck in the mail?
I didn't try this year and it must be stuck in the mail. But I've been in years past and it's a weird event. And I have to say, this might be a little controversial, but I have to say, like, even with the new theater, which I think is really exciting, and this revolving door and all this stuff, I feel like 10 years on, it's like it's getting a little tired, maybe. I don't know.
See, I would say that, but people would say, oh, Leo, that's just sour grapes. You've got your nose pressed against the glass and you don't want it to be inside interesting. But I kind of agree with you. When it was Steve, I mean, Steve was a master showman, and I was always grateful for the chance just to see him work. In the same way, you know, same way I'd be grateful for a chance to see Frank Sinatra sing. It's you're watching the best at work.
Right.
But Tim Cook's not exactly Mr. Inspiration. Phil Schiller, Craig Federighi, Eddie Q. These are definitely second tier.
Jimmy Iovine, maybe. And also, I think, like, the other thing is the Steve note, right? Like, it's become a trope, right?
Right.
And I just think that's... I don't know. I mean, I'm looking. I'm gonna watch, obviously. But you know, I just 10 years on, I'm looking for something exciting and different. And I guess probably a lot of people are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We will. Hold on a second. We will stream it. I just want to mention for people who do want to watch, you can watch Of course, Apple will stream it, but you have to have an Apple device to watch it. Actually, you have to watch it on Safari or an Apple device, or weirdly, Microsoft Edge browser will work if you have Windows 10.
Or Edge.
Who do they pay for that? I don't know. I guess it has to do with the HLS stream. But we will also stream it. You can watch it on any device, our stream. But the only bad thing about that is I, Megan Maroney, and Alex Lindsay will be, you know, commenting behind it. We're doing our Mystery Science Theater 3000 little silhouette commenting on that. And that's always fun. But it sometimes annoys people. They go, stop talking. I want to hear what Tim has to say. So you can watch Tim or you can watch us. Go ahead, Philip. I'm sorry.
There's no question that the quality fell down after Steve Jobs died. You know, Tim Cook is no Steve Jobs, and we could talk about that for quite a while. And some of the guys feel like they're kind of phoning it in. Jimmy Iovine was a disaster, as it turns out. He's a magnetic personality, but
he wandered. You didn't know where
he couldn't
was going
stay
next.
On script. No. What a terrible introduction of Apple Music. And then I do think Federici, how do you pronounce it?
I say Federighi because it's G-H.
Federighi.
Like spaghetti. Yeah.
He's nothing but dad jokes, but at least he can so hold true. The stage, you know?
He's self-mocking, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Craig at least has also the gravitas. He's in charge of iOS and software, whereas you feel like a little bit Phil Schiller, the marketing guy, Eddie Q, the music guy, they're really shills. Even though obviously Steve Jobs was a product shill, he just was so good at it, you forgot that he was selling, that he was marketing to you. You know, and that was the famous reality distortion field. That field.
The thing, I look forward to these events, and I'm not the biggest fan of the Apple devices or anything like that, but their presentations are probably the most polished that you'll see out there. You know, even though I did have an issue with Steve Jobs and the magical coin that he put on
everything was magic.
You know, and I'm like, okay, you're pushing it a little far. I know you're the man, Steve Jobs, but come on now.
It went over the top when he said the magic iPod socks that we're introducing. I was like, okay, there's nothing magic about socks for your iPod. Please, Steve, please.
Well, the device is supposed to be the main thing, right?
Show. That's and it certainly will be this time.
Yeah,
I mean, what's the alternative? A Samsung event?
Well, Samsung was notoriously bad for a while. Remember the Broadway show, which was God, was like, what am I watching? But the last Samsung event, the Note 8 event, actually, I thought was pretty well done. But the star of that was not the presenters who were awful. But the really interesting stage, they had a stage that was a screen and then side screens, and the graphics flowed to the point where it looked like it was a little tiny person in a giant field or whatever. I thought that was kind of neat.
That was beautiful, you know, but I feel bad in those Samsung events because it's almost like they're begging for applause and the crowd there, they're just like, whatever.
That's why you have to do what Apple did, which is have 650 employees who are damn well going to applaud every applause line.
The pom-poms are out.
Because it's their job on the line. All right. But now, in all seriousness, the big event for Sunday or Tuesday will be, of course, the new iPhone. There is now another leak, this coming from the iOS 11 source code, which apparently has leaked out. And Thomas Staughton, British name, has analyzed it. And interestingly, it looks like the name of the new iPhones will be not 7S, although it really will be a 7S, but iPhone 8, iPhone 8 Plus, and iPhone 10 for the 10th anniversary iPhone, and the 10 being an X, which I think is wrong. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that's a mistake. That's not what they're going to call it. They don't even call Mac OS X anymore. It's just Mac OS. Philip, come on. Okay. iPhone X?
Well, first, a couple of things. You've conflated two leaks. There was one leak that came out for the AirPod, and then there was the other leak that came out Thursday from Mac Rumors and 9to5 Mac, which has really pissed Apple off.
Oh, interesting.
To take a step back, you know, the reason – they put a lot of effort into these releases. The reason they're so slick is because Jobs used to treat them like Broadway shows, and he would rehearse and rehearse and rehearse, and everything is scripted down to the last minute. What they count on, the drama of these things, is the big reveal where they show something and it's a surprise. And the new iPhone, whatever they're going to call it, has been so thoroughly picked over and
it spoils it, leaks, doesn't it?
Yeah, leaks all around. But they had a few things that they'd held back, and then what happened was they released the gold master of iOS 11, and I'm on that list. I get the gold master, but I don't know what to do with it. You know, I can't find any secrets in it. And according to John Gruber, who I assume is basically Phil Schiller speaking to us through the blog,
right,
said this is the most damaging rumor in the history of Apple. Damaging leak.
More than the release, more than the leaving the iPhone 4 in a bar?
I know.
Come on.
But this is what he's saying. And the reason they're upset about it is, you know, that was an accident, leaving it in the bar. This, what seems to have happened is somebody, there's all this stuff in the Gold Master, but you have to be a total geek and you have to know where to look to find it. And the suspicion is that some disgruntled employee sent out the URLs to tell people where do I find the new AirPod thing that has the light on the outside. And there's a little video that shows that. Where is the name of the – yeah, there you go.
These are digital assets within the Gold Master.
Right. And somebody – the theory is somebody leaked it to 9to5 Mac and Mac Rumors, and the last remaining surprises leaked out. I don't buy it.
It can't be the iPhone X. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
First of all, half the world will call it the X, which is a terrible name for the iPhone. Half the world call it 10. They don't have a 10 product anymore. They deprecated that with macOS. It's clear. I'm going to go out on their limb and say it's not going to be called that. It's going to be the iPhone Pro. They have a Mac Pro, iMac Pro. They have a MacBook Pro. They have an iPad Pro. The only thing that's not in a Pro line is the iPhone. It's the iPhone Pro. What is this X? I think this is all disinformation. X is a variable.
Right.
It's meaningless.
Do you think it could be the iPhone edition, you know, with some $17,000 price tag like that watch has?
Well, that's one thing we also think. I don't think it'll be 17 grand, but we do expect it to be the most expensive mainstream smartphone ever sold, right? $1,200.
My theory is that, and it's not unique to me, is that they drop the numbers altogether, and it's just the iPhone, the iPhone Plus, and the iPhone Pro is as good as
that
anything.
That would make sense, because, wouldn't it? Yeah.
I think that.
Yeah.
So, is this disinformation?
Won't that be too confusing for the next release?
That's what we said about the iPad. Fair. They call it the iPad.
Fair.
How confusing is that? I have to.
But it's not selling.
Yeah,
right?
Nobody's buying that
comparatively.
One. I don't know. We'll find out on Tuesday, and it's kind of a tempest in a teapot. It is. Yeah. Who cares?
The other thing, there are even more important things leaked in that than the name, and I guess the main thing is that there's you can see within it a watch face for the Apple Watch that has a little LTE symbol on it.
Yeah, but we knew that anyway. We knew that was coming.
Well, you don't know.
Right.
You've heard rumors that it's going to happen, and this would be support for that rumor. We don't know anything until Tuesday.
Apple has said nothing. In fact,
has Robert Scoble said anything else about it?
Yeah. By the way, you know this obviously, Ann. Robert was on the show 6 months ago and said there's going to be a clear iPhone. It's amazing. It's going to be augmented reality. It's going to be clear. And I said, Robert, it's not. There is what. And I said, if they make a clear iPhone, I'm buying you dinner in any restaurant in the world. He said, we're going to Paris. I said,
go ahead and get your plane tickets.
Really? You think clear iPhone? No, I think I'm safe on this bet, but we'll find out.
Here's what I think he was saying, Leo, is that with the virtual reality.
Yeah, you'll look through it. Yeah.
You'll look through it, and it'll be like you're looking through it.
Well, I asked him that, I think. I'm going to have to go back and check the tape. Fortunately, we record these things. But I think I said, you don't mean like Pokemon Go, where I could see the grass through the phone. He said, no, clear.
Yeah.
Well, this is my problem with the event in general, though. Like, I think the event in general, we're at this point where we're never actually surprised.
Right. It's too
bad. By what comes out. There's no big reveal these days, at least for me. Like, I can't remember the last time I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't even hear about this. And my mind is blown right now. That's the issue that I have, I think, generally with these events, is all of this stuff gets leaked over and over. And I mean, I do think that the augmented reality, look, there's an area that I think Apple isn't necessarily last on, or doesn't have to be last on, because this is something that nobody has built a killer app for this, right? Unless we're talking about Pokemon Go, which in many ways is the most mainstream version of augmented reality that anyone has experienced. But, you know, I don't really care about Food Network's AR app. No offense to them. It just doesn't strike me as amazing. But like the Walking Dead AR app could be smart, because it combines this entertainment brand with a new kind of app that could be really cool. If Apple does something really smart and inventive with augmented reality, I think that could actually be a big deal. That would at least make me sort of like stop whatever I'm doing and pay a lot of attention to what they are doing with ARKit, for sure.
We've seen a lot of interesting ARKit demos. It is easier to develop for ARKit than something like, say, Google's Tango. In fact, Google was forced to respond with AR Core, which is their version of ARKit, a dumbed down version of Tango. I think that is possible, though. What do you think, Ant? That AR is the VR for 2017. It is another or 3D TV for 2017. Another kind of gimmicky idea that just isn't going to get that much traction.
Well, no, because if it's Apple doing it, it's going to catch on for whatever strange reason. I don't know why. I personally don't see AR as something that's going to be huge. But, you know, whenever Apple says something, you know, like swipe to lock, man, that's the most magical thing in the world. You know, so
you know what
magical,
it reminds
there it
me
is,
of?
Magical.
Yeah. It reminds me of when the first iPhone came out with that you could it had a thumb, could read your thumb. And I can't remember what it did. Did it unlock the screen? And then it sort of seemed like, so what? And then like it took 2 years before it worked for Apple Pay. And suddenly it was a whole different thing.
Yeah, and we'd had fingerprint readers before, but Apple invented it, of course. But it did change it. It put it on the map.
Yeah. I think there's a AR on an iPhone feels like a minor thing. I've seen, you know, virtual measuring tapes that are kind of cool, and there'll be things like that. But I don't. I think this is walking up to the glasses. I think Apple is working its way into having AR inside your glasses, because you're not going to walk around with your phone all day. Looking to see, you know, what information is out there, but you might actually just look around with your glasses.
Yeah, do you ever fly your drone with virtual reality glasses?
The FPV? I've done that a time or two, not with my particular drone, but unfortunately I struggle with vertigo. I mean, I could just get dizzy staring at the camera right now.
Yeah.
But it's a really, really nice experience to fly, but I don't think anyone should just go out and drop top dollar because it's FPV.
Right.
You know, it's sort of a
people do it.
HoloLens is the most amazing thing that I've seen.
You've used the HoloLens, Ben? Have you used it?
I've used the HoloLens twice, and it is to me that was the thing that I really stopped me in my tracks and made me go, holy crap, this could be huge. I've done two
HTC
demos of it.
HTC Vive did that for me.
Really? Yeah.
The thing about the HoloLens, it's been 2 years, and I haven't seen any improvement.
No.
So Microsoft put a lot behind this. They said it's not coming out till 2019. And this is the problem Apple's going to have, too. Yeah, sure. If we could get spectacles that looked like normal glasses, not like some sort of weird Sergey Brin Borg geek thing, like the Google Glass, then maybe there'd be a market. But that technology, it has to have a standalone, powerful computer in a pair of spectacles you can walk around with enough battery life. You know, it's got to have more than a few hours battery life. It has to have some sort of heads-up display in the glass. All of this, I don't think we're that close.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either.
It's going to be terribly expensive.
And price, right. It's got to cost something you can afford.
Mm-hmm. Right. But you know, you say that about every technology coming down the pike. What Apple brings to it is they've got a huge crowd of developers who are eager to be early on whatever the next thing is going to be, because the first to arrive make all the money. So they're working on AR kit stuff. And the other thing Apple brings to the party is they've got whatever 500 or 600 or 700 or 800 million devices that can run this stuff, or they will by the time, you know.
Well, that's the biggest leap, isn't it? All of a sudden, yeah. Every iPhone, I think it was from the 6S on, can do this. That's a right. Giant market all of a sudden out of nowhere.
Right. So it doesn't take too many interesting apps for people to try it out. And it could be something that people make money on the iPhone for a while. It does feel like until there's a new, it's on the inside of a car windshield or it's on inside the glasses, it doesn't feel like a hugely significant technology to me.
I want to take a little break. When we come back, I want to talk about the other major technology that will apparently be revealed in the new iPhone that Apple was forced to include because they couldn't figure out how to make Touch ID work through the screen, and that's Face ID or face recognition. Our guest, Ant Pruitt, who's joining us from Tech Republic, contributing writer there, photographer, droner, podcaster, and a Clemson fan.
You know it.
Most importantly, also with us, Ben Johnson. You hear him on the Codebreaker podcast. He's the creator there. Heard him for a long time at Marketplace, their tech columnist there. Molly Wood's taken his place, and he's got something new in the works. We'll find out about that someday, not today.
Someday,
like Monday. That's a bigger announcement than the Apple announcement. Forget the Apple announcement. What's happening Monday? And it's good to have you, Ben. And also of course, the great Philip Elmer DeWitt from PED30.com, Apple Watcher, and somebody who will actually be at the Apple event on Tuesday. I think I want you to explore the new Steve Jobs Theater and look for secret places.
Well, you know, the new Facebook rules say that if you have at least 100 followers, and I think I have 112 on Facebook, you can shoot live and it goes straight up.
A little point I'd like to just mention. The last time I was at an Apple event in 2010, the iPad announced. I live streamed it. I turned my computer around, live streamed Steve Jobs, and I've never been invited back, Philip. Just want to mention.
Oh, well, no, I wasn't going to live stream the event because I'd be competing with Apple's much higher res.
They didn't have a stream then. That's what I thought. Well, somebody ought to do this. I've got all these cameras behind me.
Did they complain to you?
No, they said not a word. I just never got invited back.
Yeah.
It may not be related to that at all. I have no idea. I don't know.
Well, you know, maybe because you badmouth Apple so frequently.
I don't think unfairly, do I? I'm fair to Apple.
Yeah.
No, you think I'm unfair to Apple?
No, I don't think you're unfair. You come with a Windows friendly.
That's so untrue. I am not Windows friendly. I've owned every Mac. I bought a Mac in 1984 in the first 100 days. I've owned every iPhone.
You own every piece of technology that comes.
Well,
down
that's
the
true,
pike.
But I hated Windows for a long time. It's only recently I think Windows has become a fair rival to Macintosh, and mostly because Apple has neglected its strengths and produced crappy hardware in the last couple of years, and its operating system started getting superannuated. Thank goodness for APFS, the new file system.
That's what I mean. I'm honest.
That's called honest.
Good skepticism. I like his skepticism.
I'm honest. I'm not an Apple fanboy. Yeah. Well, you know what? I am. This is why it hurts me a little bit that you said that, Phil, because I am an Apple fanboy. I want them to do better. I'm disappointed that they haven't lately.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. Anyway, all I was going to say is I'm just going to shoot I think what people want to see is the inside of the Steve Jobs Theater and whatever else.
Stream that. I'll watch that.
Yeah, that's what I'll do. So I'm going to be.
It's the most Dr. Evil looking thing I've ever seen.
Well, there's also
some
questions.
I mean, I haven't seen it, but it's, yeah.
Well, but like, yeah. It's a glass, so there's a glass, the entryway is this big glass, wide open thing, which it's not clear. Is that going to be the demo area? There will be a demo area. There's some, if you look at the plans, there's something underneath. There's escalators down. It's the world's largest carbon fiber roof on top of it. But you the theater is underground, very Dr. Evil. And so you take the escalators to the underground theater. If that's the demo area, somebody said that there are walls, automated walls that can come up and hide the demo area. So when you enter, it'll be blacked out, and then you'll go in and go down, and then after the event, the walls will come down, and then the whole world will be able to see through the glass. I don't know. These are
and then the floor opens up, and there's a pool with sharks with freaking laser beams on their heads.
Lasers!
I think that's, yeah.
It is so Dr. Evil. What's this rotating elevator you were saying?
Oh, yeah.
There's like a loading elevator that...
I love the fact that you're trolling them about Dr. Evil, you know, considering the chair that you're sitting in right now.
Oh, wait a minute. That's, well, you're right. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Look at your chair, man.
All I need is a naked cat. This is definitely, watch this.
Dr. Evil doesn't have a microphone to knock over. That's all I'm saying.
That was a, that, oh, man. Did I kill my
that
mic?
That's beautiful.
All right. You can hear me still? Okay, little tip for Dr. Evils. If you're going to be an evil genius, make sure your mic is clear. Our show today brought to you by Qualcomm. It'll be interesting to see. One of the things will be interesting to see if Apple continues to use the best LTE radios out there, the Qualcomm LTE radios. Remember in the last iPhone, they did 50-50, and the Intel radios they put in were not so fast. So they slowed down the Qualcomm radios so that nobody would feel bad. Oh, I'm sorry. Don't want you to feel bad. Look, if you're going to get a new phone, get an Android phone with a Qualcomm Snapdragon Gigabit LTE radio in it. With additional lanes for data to flow on, 4x4 MIMO, 256 QAM. It's got carrier bonding. These are the fastest LTE phones ever made. The Note 8, the S8, the S8 Active, the Z-Force, the HTC U11, because they've got this amazing LTE radio designed to deliver the fastest mobile connectivity and help speed things up, even in crowded places. You could turbocharge all your connected apps, stream 360-degree videos and YouTube VR in 4K resolution with minimal buffering, minimal stuttering. And lest you feel guilty, it's better for everybody because it makes everybody's connection faster, even in congested networks. If you don't have to feel bad because everybody's getting better performance. Gigabit LTE, as much as 7 times faster than your home Wi-Fi. Carrier aggregation, 4x4 MIMO. You can read all about this, 256 QAM. If you go to the website, snapdragon.com/gigabit. Make the most of your unlimited data plan. To learn more about faster network connections in crowded places, snapdragon.com/gigabit. We thank Qualcomm so much. Really happy to have Qualcomm as an advertiser for their support of This Week in Tech. So let's, by the way, I was just reading John Gruber's, wow, you're right, he was scathing. Gruber's Daring Fireball article about this Apple leak. He says the BBC has confirmed what he already knew, that the leak was sent by an Apple employee. Gruber says, I could state with nearly 100% certainty that it was. I think there's a good chance Apple's going to find out who it was. He says these URLs that were hidden in the Gold Master were not discovered by guessing, but because they were published at obvious URLs prematurely, somebody who works at Apple emailed these URLs to 9to5 Mac and Mac Rumors, possibly without even knowing just how much information could be gleaned from them. He says, let me clarify that sentence. Whoever leaked these URLs knew it would be an incredibly damaging leak. And he says, this person should be ashamed of themselves and should be very worried when their phone next rings.
They should be worried because Apple famously hired former CIA and NSA leak busters to chase these guys down, and I wouldn't want. And they, you know, there was Mark Gurman was the guy who was doing most of the leaking when he was still at 9to5 Mac before he went to Bloomberg. And it was clearly coming from the inside. It wasn't stuff coming from Taiwan. You know, it was inside the software leaks. And a couple guys got fired shortly after. Yeah. So
they'll get fired. But Steve Jobs was famous for... He would hire new people and put them on bogus projects for a 100-day trial period to see if they leaked anything about the bogus project. And he would know it was them because no one else was working on it. Or he would give people selective information and wait to see what leaked. Jobs was notoriously paranoid. It was funny because the anti-leak training that Apple gives to its new employees was leaked. So... And Apple, quite rightly said in this anti-leak training, it spoils it. It spoils it for us. It spoils it for everybody. Your colleagues are working hard on new products. And a big part of the new product is the launch, the release, the unveiling. Our fans, our customers love it. It's important for us in marketing terms, and you can really spoil it. So, yeah, I agree with you. Gruber obviously got a call from his buddy Phil, who said... We're going to get this guy.
What's left out of that, though, is, I mean, okay, I feel bad for the guys at Apple who work so hard and we're hoping that they could keep it a surprise. But, you know, look at it from the journalist's point of view. There's a lot of people who are trying to make a living retailing whatever information they can get about Apple. There's thousands of investors who love this stuff. And, you know, the journalists are working hard.
It's our job.
Yeah.
For instance, and you know, I think partly we do it because we know you're interested. You want to get a link, you know, your articles, your blog posts read. You want to get your podcast listened to. You talk about Apple rumors, but also I think there's a very legitimate need to know on the part of consumers because right now you can buy an Essential phone, a Note 8. You can maybe hold off for the Pixel. You're wondering what Apple's going to do. Should I wait or not? And this is consumer information. I think it's absolutely appropriate to tell everything we know.
And it's certainly not our job to protect Apple secrets.
No.
Right?
No, that's their job. Apparently a job they do quite well.
That's their job.
Yeah.
I always wonder, you know, with leaks like that, especially coming from an internal employee, what is their motivation? You know, is it money? Is it just an axe to grind or what? Because you're working at Apple, I would presume you have it pretty good as a staffer in there and not someone that's in one of the factories. But yet you still want to potentially leak out some information to the press. And I apologize for Kylo Finn back here barking at the rabbits in the window.
But your dog is named?
Kylo Finn.
Is that some sort of Star Wars reference?
That would be correct, sir.
But kind of like a messed up Star Wars reference?
Pretty much.
Yeah, okay. No, but we had this conversation, actually. It's funny you should mention this, Ant, because on Windows Weekly this week, I asked Mary Jo Foley, who is kind of like Mark Gurman for Microsoft. She gets a lot of information. Why do people talk to you? And there are a lot of reasons. Some of it is disaffected employees. And as good as it is working at Apple, there's got to be some people who are unhappy, right, working at the fruit factory. And then some of it is the glory. Right. I know something no one knows. I'm going to, you know, I like being able to be the first person to tell you, Mary Jo, about this thing. There's lots of reasons people leak. And of course, people like Mark Gurman and Mary Jo Foley spend a lot of energy cultivating sources for that reason. Exactly.
Then you get into the whole code of ethics for your employer. You know, just I don't get it myself personally.
Yeah.
Someone was asking within the White House, which is, you know, leaks like a sieve, why they were doing it. And they said, oh, it's therapy.
I got to tell somebody. You won't believe what happened today.
This is going to kill me. Get it off my chest, please.
It might be. It makes you feel important. There's a lot of reasons. You're right, though. I mean, obviously, it's not good for the company. It's unethical. You're violating your commitment to the company that you work at. You shouldn't do it. But as a journalist, I'm glad we get leaks. I don't actually deal in leaks. I deal in other people's leaks. Like, we talk about people who have got leaks. So I'm glad there's people like Mary Jo and Mark Gurman who do this.
So I try to avoid rumors because
it's not useful.
You know what? Unless you can confirm it, it doesn't help.
But at this point, I feel like a lot of these rumors are, you know, there's a convergence as you get closer and closer to these events. A lot of them at this point have to be true, right?
Yes.
And we've been to enough keynotes where it turned out, they were true.
It is kind of disappointing when you get a keynote and you go, oh, we knew all of that.
Yeah.
That's why every year.
Yeah. That's why I am of the very probably wrong opinion that this most recent leak is disinformation. That Apple knew that they prepared this information and it will not be the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus or iPhone X. It is going to be something else and it's disinformation. Is it not unreasonable to think that Apple might do that? Be that sophisticated? Yeah.
At a certain point, this has happened enough times now, and it's a regular enough thing that we basically know what's going to be happening with the new device before we actually see the new device.
Right.
At a certain point, you have to imagine that a company like Apple has to say, well, we need to figure out a way to fight back against this. So I don't think that's an unreasonable conspiracy theory at all.
One of the stories came out of the Wall Street Journal, actually a story we've been hearing for months, but they repeated it this week, that Apple had, in order to increase the bezel on the new iPhone, and everybody's doing that. If you're going to get a flagship phone this year, you're going to get a flagship phone that has a bigger screen without a bigger phone. That's the holy grail. And
chin, no forehead.
Does it by eliminating both the side frames, the bezels, but also the forehead at the top of the chin at the bottom. But of course, you do that on an iPhone, you eliminate the home button, which does two things. It's a very important navigation button on the iPhone because a lot of apps, it's the only way to get out of the app. I haven't seen a quit in any app in years on the iPhone. You're supposed to press the home button. So that's the quit button as much as anything else, the back button. But also it's Touch ID. Apple didn't do what others have done, put the Touch ID on the back. Apple, according to the journal, tried to make the Touch ID work through the screen. If the screen's the whole front of the phone, you put your finger somewhere on that front and it would read your finger. They couldn't get it working. They thought they would. And they went to plan B late in the production cycle. So the journal says that means these phones will be in very short supply until next year, these new phones.
I really love the edge-to-edge.
I do too.
The edge-to-edge, it's just like, as an Android user, I think it's the only way that I want to look at my phone. I want that screen space. I have to say I'm a little bit on the fence about the home button. It's been a while since I used an iPhone, but on the one hand, the physical button seems pointless these days, right? I mean, set the biometrics aside for a second. The physical button seems pointless in some ways because everything else you do is on the screen itself. But on the other hand, when my Android phone geeks out and I hit the home button and it doesn't work, I want to throw my phone out the window. And I feel like the physical button somehow helps mitigate the helplessness that you feel. Yeah, exactly. So,
When people ask about phone recommendations, I have to consider what type of person is asking me this. And if it's someone that's not going to understand rooting and rhyming and things like that, I would always tell them, go get the iPhone, because the second you screw something up, just hit that home button. You're good.
That's a really good point. It's the panic button.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Some of the rumors are that the on-off switch the screen on-off switch will now become the new home button, or at least assume some of that functionality. It'll be overloaded. There'll be multiple things that button can do. That's going to be difficult to discover, difficult to use. And then because they lost the fingerprint reader, they're going to do face recognition. They're going to apparently, according to rumor, call it Face ID. Raises a lot of questions.
Yeah, I'm not sure I buy that journal story. I tried to address the question, are they really going to kill the Touch ID? Is the fingerprint recognition really going away? And there's only a handful of original sources on that story. It goes back to the Taiwanese guy whose name I always forget.
Ming-Chi Kuo. Ming-Chi Kuo from Digitimes.
Yeah. And he said definitively in February, I think it was, that it was that they definitely were going to kill it for the reason that the Wall Street Journal gave is that they couldn't get it to work. Samsung couldn't get it to work under the glass screen, and neither could Apple. After that, people kind of, I read Mark Gurman very carefully. It was sort of maybe. He didn't know for sure, and neither did the guys at iMore. I think it would be crazy to get rid of the fingerprint recognition system that millions of people have learned how to use to use Apple Pay and to unlock their phone. Even if the Face ID thing is better and works perfectly, you don't want to take stuff away. It's like you don't want to take away Social Security when they've got it. So I'm skeptical. I'm waiting to see. This is one of the surprises. What is the name? What is the price? And did they really kill Facebook recognition? Waiting to see.
Touch ID.
Touch ID.
There's a lot of questions face recognition raises, of course. It can't be always looking for your face. So you've got to trigger it somehow with a gesture of a button press or a noise or something.
Pick it up. You pick up the phone, I think, and the movement.
Yeah.
We don't know. We will see.
It's from a security point of view, it's a disaster. The police want to see the phone. All they have to do is put the phone in your face and then say thank you. I mean,
This is a really interesting point, right? Because this is part of the whole like Apple versus FBI thing. One of the things we learned from that battle was this distinction between what you are and what you know. Right. And in the case of what you are in the courts, the courts essentially can be forced to give up your fingerprint, have something look at your face, give up your blood, I suppose. But in terms of what you know, in terms of an alphanumeric code that unlocks your phone, the authorities can't actually make you provide that, or at least not as easily. And I think that's really interesting to think about. I mean, look, I'm not worried necessarily about the authorities coming to kicking down my door and saying, you know, we need whatever's in your phone. Look at your phone so that we can get into it. But I do think it's something that at least I think about when I think about biometrics more generally is like, if I have an alphanumeric code, like nobody can force me to give that over, or at least it's very hard comparatively to biometrics. And I think biometrics is a little bit, there's a little bit of an ick factor there for me. Just the fact that the authorities can much more easily get you to provide that.
I should point out though, that putative protection, against something you have or something you know. We know that, you know, you can be compelled to give a fingerprint, a hair for a DNA analysis and all of that. The courts have upheld that. That doesn't violate your right against self-incrimination. But, you know, there's a guy, a former Philadelphia police officer, who's been in jail now for 2 years, not because they convicted him of a crime, but because he would not reveal the password to decrypt his hard drives.
Yeah.
So sad. And he's appealed, and the courts have upheld the, you know, and he will, you know, he is on an indefinite jail term because he's not going to give it up.
Crazy.
I only reason I bring that up is don't assume that, you know, just because you know the password that protects you.
They can't punish you. Totally agree.
Am I the only person that's concerned about the pricing of this particular iPhone or heck, any of the other flagship phones of recent?
Yeah, it's been slowly ramping up, hasn't it? The Note 8 is $930 to $960, getting really close to $1,000.
Dude, my first car was nowhere near that price. You know what I'm saying?
When I grew up, you could buy a Volkswagen brand new for $2,000. So I can
exactly. Like, how is this even? I don't quite get it. I look at the pricing, and I tried to think back over the last several years. And I remember the whole conspiracy theory of planned obsolescence or whatever. Right. And I don't.
Do you think it's kind of a digital redlining? Like, well, you have to be rich basically to own a flagship phone.
That's what it sounds like, you know. And I don't think that's fair because it's a phone. It's just the phone. If it's something like that, and I love my Pixel. Because it's not only a phone, but it actually helps me with content creation too.
Right.
You know, but it's still Dadgummit expensive, man. Good grief.
And we don't know how expensive it's
coming out.
But and traditionally, the rumors about pricing have not been right. Apple's very good at kind of telegraphing a higher price and then surprising everybody, making everybody feel good about $950 when they're expecting $1,200. And that may be what happens. But that is the rumor. $1,200 starting price, then $1,300 for 256 gigs of RAM and $1,400 for 512 gigs of RAM.
So crazy.
When we paid $500 for phones, you know, it seemed like it was a decent value because you knew you were going to get at least 2 years out of that for those $500, right, in my opinion. And sometimes even longer. I know I've had a few phones that I kept longer than the particular upgrade cycle came around. But now that's just too much. I mean, I cringe when I got this Pixel, but I've been waiting for maybe 3 years or so. So I'm like, okay, I'm due, and I will hold on to this Pixel for probably another two more years. But I just don't know if every consumer feels that way.
It was a disappointment. I remember when Google announced the price on the Pixel, though, because they had made less expensive Nexus phones for several generations. And all of a sudden, the Pixel was priced at the same flagship phone price as other competing phones.
Hasn't the iPhone always been considered a luxury device, though, in fairness? I mean, like, I take your point, Ant, that you had a longer relationship with that phone in the beginning, right? And it felt like you were getting a lot of bang for your buck. But I also feel like, I mean, it seems to me like the iPhone has always been considered to a certain degree a luxury device or a device that's like sort of top of line, right?
The newest iPhone.
Here's what I would submit. Yeah, yeah. What if Apple offers, as they do now, and like the iPhone SE, a relatively lower cost phone, medium prices with an iPhone 8 and 8 Plus or 7S and 7S Plus. And then, and this is, I feel like, I understand they're going to get hit, just as they got hit for the $12,000, $17,000 Apple Watch. And perhaps rightly so. But on the other hand, I wouldn't mind if Apple said, look, what if we designed a phone and we just put everything in it that we could? We made it as good as we could without regard to price, and then we're going to charge what we have to charge for it. But we thought there are some of you who are less price sensitive who want to see the state of the art. I think I could accept that. The real problem I have is I don't know if it will be state of the art. I don't know. I mean, look, we've had OLED screens on phones for years. They're not the first to do a bezel-less full screen design. They've already dropped the headphone jack, which I frankly consider a necessity in a smartphone.
I hate that.
It's crazy.
That they did that.
And they're about to drop Touch ID, which they made to be the be-all and end-all of authentication on a phone. I don't know if this phone's going to be worth $1,200, but I wouldn't be against a company saying, look, we're just going to make the best thing we can, regardless of price. But I don't know if this will be that.
There's a little piece of economic data. When they introduced the 7 Plus, they broke the rule that every increment was $100 more than the one underneath it. And they went to $130. And then they watched to see what economists call the price inelasticity. And what they discovered is that they sold more of them, not less. So that raising the price didn't hurt them. It, in fact, for a lot of different reasons, it went up, not necessarily because of the price. My guess is $999 is probably the entry point for this. And my guess is that price inelasticity will still take effect, and they will sell as many of these things as fast as they can make them into next year. It'll be a long time till you can buy one of these things just because it won't be available.
Right.
And that for Apple, that's a good problem to have. Because they want to make
remember
money.
When Apple made a MacBook, and they made it in the traditional silver, and then they offered a black version of it for $100 more. You were paying $100 for paint, and it outsold all the other models. Yeah. Apple's known for a long time this lesson.
Yeah.
And so the other thing is that Apple has decided that the way they're going to offer cheaper phones is to keep selling the older versions at a discount. And, They're saying if you want the premium phone, you're going to have to pay for it. If you want the iPhone experience, you can get a pretty good one for is pretty much the price of the competition, a little bit more.
And it is interesting that Google has responded to this with something they call Android One. There's a couple of features of Android One. One is that it will be as close to pure Android as possible, even though it won't be made by Google, and it will be guaranteed security patches and updates. The first Android One phone is out. It's from Motorola, the X4, and it is fairly – I have to look at the pricing, but I think it's under $400. And so Google, I think, understands – first of all, they understand two things. One, that low-priced phones – Android, most of the – reason Android has so many models out there is most of the Android phones are low-priced, but also that there's an issue with these low-priced phones. They're not getting updates, so this is Evan Blass. Evleaks has leaked this Motorola X4, which is, and on the back it says powered by Android One. I think this is still a leak. I don't think this has become official, so I don't know what the price will be. But that would make a lot of sense. There's Evan's leak. If you click on that image, I think it, Carson, you'll see the full phone. And at the bottom it says Android One. Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, my parents both have Motorola's, and they're really solid phones.
The G4, G5, yeah. The new one, the E. These are good phones, and there is a market. So I kind of honor Google and its partners like Motorola for making phones normal people can afford, that you don't give up every flagship feature. But as long as those things exist, or an iPhone SE exists, I do like the idea that there is a phone where we're going to spare no expense to make the best thing we can make. How do you like it? And who else but Apple? Apple's got the audience for it. So I'm not I don't know. I understand your point, Ant. I agree, you know. And somebody in the chat room said, you know, there are people who have to buy an iPhone for security reasons. Journalists in tough nations where, you know, security is paramount, they don't buy Android phones.
True.
And the U.S. government, isn't the U.S. government, haven't they been, like, the federal government been transitioning to iPhones?
Yeah.
Over the past, like, 5 years or something.
What do you guys
like
think?
That?
Do you think that Android is that insecure and that iPhone is the only secure solution?
I can't say that it is, but there's always some writing on the wall about an issue with the Android security.
Seems like
hardly
it,
ever
huh?
hear it on the Apple side.
Yeah,
hardly ever hear it.
Yeah.
As big as the Apple brand is, you hardly ever hear security issues.
It's no accident that Tim Cook made a huge deal about standing up to the FBI.
Right.
That was a marketing
on brand.
Not
very
to say
on
he
brand.
Doesn't believe it. Yeah. But it's a branding exercise, and I think it worked pretty well for them.
I think so. I mean, I love Androids, and I use a Mac. I've got a Mac laptop, but I've had Androids for a long time, and I think generally speaking, I'm okay. I like the customizability, and so I'm okay with dealing with some of the security challenges, or at least being, you know, I'm okay with taking that risk. But generally speaking,
you're at least cognizant of the security challenges, though. You're not the average user. You're at least aware of the security issues.
Exactly. So I do think, like as you said before, Ant, I think you were saying that you recommend people, depending on their how serious of a user they are, an iPhone is a really good option in some ways. And plenty of serious users use iPhones too. But I think that, you know, generally speaking, it does seem fair to say that iPhones are more secure.
You know who's big fans of the iPhone? The Boston Red Sox.
This story was the best. I love this story.
It's kind of goofy because you can, you know, so the Red Sox have been accused of stealing signs. This is in baseball, you know. This happens in football too. In baseball, the catcher sends signs to the pitcher what pitch to throw. The coaches will send signs to base runners and hitters as to what to do in the next play. And if the opposing team could figure out what the plans were, it'd be a lot easier to get guys out. Apparently, the Red Sox were sent. I don't know how, Philip, you talk about this on your blog. What were they doing? Were they texting each other? I mean, it really didn't require an Apple Watch to do this, right?
Well, I think my assumption, because if you're texting, you might as well use hand signals. Why get fancy?
Right.
My assumption was that they were sending video to the Apple Watch. And what I love is that Tim Cook had visited the Red Sox dugout. I don't know how much earlier, but they'd given him he was wearing a whole Red Sox uniform and a Red Sox hat, and he posed with them. And I can just see Cook saying, look what you can do with this watch. You can actually send video through it.
There's no camera on the watch. The video can't be taken by the watch, but you could show video.
Right. You can send it.
So this is what the New York Times said. The Yankees, who had long been suspicious of the Red Sox stealing catcher's signs in Fenway Park, said that there was video of from the broadcast, I believe, showing a member of the Red Sox training staff looking at his Apple Watch in the dugout and then relaying a message to other players in the dugout who would signal teammates in the field about the kind of pitch he was going to get.
Something happened. The way I understood the story, and I'm not a baseball expert, but the way I understood the story was somebody at second base was hand signaling. Does this make sense?
No. The commissioner's office confronted the Red Sox, who admitted their trainers had received signals from video replay personnel and then relayed that information to Red Sox players. This has been going on for several weeks. And apparently, you know, they obviously, the video replay personnel had iPhones, which they would then either send the image or it would be just as easy to say it's going to be, a fastball high and inside in a text message that the trainer could then see in the watch. The Red Sox...
You don't have to...
Responded by filing a complaint against the Yankees, saying the team uses a camera from its YES television network exclusively, like a dedicated camera, to steal signs during the game. The Yankees denied it. I don't think the Apple Watch really is a big part of this story, but I thought it was funny that the Apple Watch even made the tabloids. Dirty socks, Apple caught red-handed using Apple Watch to cheat versus Yanks. This must be, is this the Daily News, Philip, or the Post?
It's all the New York dailies.
How do you like them apples? Red Sox fess up. They even have a an Apple Watch with a Boston Red Sox watch band saying, wicked curve coming.
This is like the techiest version of Red Sox suck, no Yankees suck.
it just cracked. Wicked curve coming. Watch out there. Wow. Wow.
But did you know that it's against league rules to use any electronics in the dugout?
So that's it. I mean, that's
antique.
That's why this is an important story, because an Apple Watch, which could ostensibly just be a wristwatch, is in fact an electronic device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can't use iPhones. You can't use.
Well, there you go.
They can use telephones. There's one telephone they can use.
So that's why this is important. This was a way that they could send that text message or whatever, a video or a text message. It seems like you'd send a text message.
Well, the text, you'd have to type it. That would take so long.
Not on the watch. The guys in the video booth go,
we're
going to send this. And then I don't know. Maybe you're saying they sent a picture of the signal.
I think the live signal of the guy, of what the catcher is doing. Yeah. Yeah.
So crazy.
Because you're in the dugout, you can't see it, right? He's hiding it down here in his crotch. Okay. Well, I just thought that was the cutest story of the week.
Since we're innovating.
Innovation. Courage, my friends. Courage. Apple has also canceled the Apple Music Festival. It's sad to hear that for 10 years, Apple had been doing these great live, all through the month of September, live concerts that you could watch on iTunes.
Free.
We went, Lisa and I were going to be in London towards the end of September a couple of years ago. We asked our friends at the iTunes James said over that iTunes, could you get us in? And we went to a show. It was really fun in the Roundhouse in London. And they do a beautiful job of streaming it. But I guess.
Well, someone in my chat room said that it wasn't so much that they were giving up on this as that they had pivoted to some new business model. I don't know if it's carpool karaoke or some.
I hope it's not.
They want to.
Planet of the Apps. I hope not.
Yeah, me too.
Jeez.
But the trouble with the Roundhouse, it was just very local. Only someone in London could see it unless he streamed it. And they now have other. They really want to. They're competing with the other music streamers, and they've got to find some edge, that something that they can do exclusive for Apple Music, or they're going to die.
Yeah. All right, we're going to stop with the Apple. I know you've all. We always have the people say, okay, you talked about Apple for an hour. Okay, we're done. We're the Apple. We're going to talk about Russia and Facebook. We're going to talk about, of course, about Equifax and a lot more. We've got a great panel here. Philip Elmer DeWitt, he says okay because he's like, I don't have anything else to say. Is that it?
Philip, I can go home now, right?
You can go home. No, stay, please. PED 30, his great new website. I call it new. You've been doing it for a while now, right?
Year and a half.
Yeah. Feels new to me.
He's new to me every morning.
Yeah, and soon he'll be getting an early morning flight to Cupertino for the Big Apple event on Tuesday. And we'll get you back on soon to get your... Because one of the reasons you want to go to that event is they have the demo room. You can go play with it and all that.
Yeah.
You can show it your face. Somebody said, here's how you make the iPhone secure, the face recognition secure, is you make a face when you're signing it up. You go... And then... It doesn't work unless you make that same face. And that way you're safe because no one will know what face to make.
Well, it's apparently using 3D so that...
I want you to try that, would you? The only negative is that...
Put on a clown mask.
Then from then on, anytime you want to unlock your phone, you have to go... People are going to think, wait, he's a nice guy, but does he have a tick? What is going on there? Ben Johnson also here from Codebreaker, the podcast. Great to have him. It's somebody
great
I've been
to be here.
Wanting to get on for a long time. So nice to have you. And speaking of getting on for a long time, Ant Pruitt, one of the best photographers, drone guys out there. He's a contributing writer to Tech Republic. And it's been a long overdue getting you on the show. Thank you for joining us with your Barry White voice. I like that.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
Thank you.
Just say, when a man and a woman... No, actually better not. Let's
play a little music. You're getting a whole different rate of
rhythm. Yeah, you know, baby, I love it when you come close to me. And our show, brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you looking to hire a tech professional or anybody in any business? There's no better way than ZipRecruiter. You might say, well, I know, you know, I'm going to hire, I'll go to the site where those people hang out or whatever. But it doesn't work that way. The perfect employee might be out there, but just not looking at the job site you posted to. So why not use ZipRecruiter? Post to 100-plus job sites with one click. ZipRecruiter puts it everywhere, so you have the maximum reach. Even Twitter and Facebook, the most people will see that job posting, which almost guarantees that right person will see it. That's the one you want, the guy or gal who's perfect for that job. Now, you might say, well, hey, that's fine, Leo, but does this mean my phone's going to ring off the hook and my inbox overflow? No. That's the beauty of this, because all of those candidates pour into the ZipRecruiter interface. They don't call you. They don't email you. It goes into the ZipRecruiter interface. You can screen them with true, false, yes, no, essay questions. You can eliminate people who don't work, rank the rest, hire the right person fast. 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in that interface within one day. That fast. It works so well. We've used it, and I recommend it. And look at these million other companies, some of the biggest companies in the world who've used ZipRecruiter. No more juggling emails, no more calls to your office. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidate fast in any profession, anywhere in the country. And, of course, tech people, it's a great way to reach them, the IT professionals. Take your company to the next level today with more than 300 applications delivered. ZipRecruiter, they know how to do it. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of every size to find the most qualified candidates with immediate results. And you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter right now for free when you go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. Equifax. I can just shake my head. So first of all, we spend so much time talking about privacy and how Google knows everything or Facebook knows everything. At least with Google and Facebook, you know what you're giving them this information and you know what they're doing with it. But who knew there were three, actually four, I found out now there's a fourth company in this country whose sole job it is to collect every possible bit of information about you and you and you and all of us and then sell it to other companies. That's what the credit reporting agencies do. Equifax is just one of them. There's TransUnion, Experian, Equifax, TransUnion. Oh, and this new one that I never heard of, but I found out on the New York Times, is it Anovis? So I understand why we have to. It's a necessary evil, because if you're going to go try to buy a car or a house or rent a house, get a job, sometimes they'll do a credit report on you, even to get hired. Companies need to find out, are you credit worthy? Are you a worthwhile risk? So that's what these agencies do. They collect all that information, and then companies come to them and say, tell me all about Leo. Can I lend him money? They also have a side business, pretty lucrative side business, I'm told, selling your information to companies that want to give you free credit card offers. You ever get a free credit card offer in the mail? Well, where do they get your information from? Experian, Equifax, TransUnion. That's their business. All right, I understand. Necessary evil, capitalist economy. We got to have these guys. But if you're going to do this kind of skeezy business, you have a very high responsibility to protect that data.
That's what I didn't understand. Didn't they have, well, let me ask it this way. Do they have some type of compliance in place that they're supposed to follow the way all of our other financial institutions
That's
in the U.S.?
That's a good question. Apparently not. Equifax told us all this week that 143 million customer records had been stolen by hackers. I bet you that number's low. I bet you that number goes up over time. We've seen that before. Apparently, I love this. This is Dan Gooden's
great image.
Yeah, Dan Gooden's article in Ars Technica with a guy trying to stem the flow from a pipe, not very effectively. Apparently, Equifax knew about it July 29th. Shortly thereafter, three Equifax employees, including their chief financial officer, sold stock worth millions of dollars. And then they revealed it publicly, and of course the stock price tumbled. I think that sounds like insider trading. Equifax said, oh no, those guys didn't know. Your CFO, really? Your CFO did not know? Okay, all right. I'm sure the SEC will have something to say about that later. 5 weeks they knew about this. They didn't tell us. Right there, that's a problem, because the minute that stuff goes out into the dark net and is being traded by hackers, you're at risk. We're all at risk. Mother's maiden name, social security number. In some cases, right. Credit card numbers, phone numbers, addresses. Equifax has not been very upfront about what information was leaked, how this information was retrieved, why it took them so long to respond. They really haven't said much at all. In fact, the only thing Equifax did is set up a website, which I'm not going to give you, because you shouldn't go there, that you can enter in the last six. There's only nine in your social security number. Last six digits. No, there's 10, right? All but the first three digits of your social and your last name. And then they would say, oh, you were affected, or no, you weren't. Except that Brian Krebs entered a random number and Donald Trump's name, and it said, oh, yeah, you've been affected. It's random, apparently. Either it doesn't work or it has nothing to do with anything. And then they immediately send you to a site where they offer you a year of free credit monitoring, a year I'm sure in a year and a day, they're going to say, and by the way, that's $39.95 from now on. And they're trying to make money on this.
That's so sleazy.
Also, they asked people to agree to terms of service, right? Didn't they?
This is a little questionable. Service, Equifax said, this doesn't apply to the breach. This only applies to this new Trusted ID service. However, they said if you sign up for Trusted ID, which you absolutely should not do, you should not give them the last six of your social. You shouldn't have anything to do with Equifax at all if you can help it. What they said is, you can't sue us. You can only, you can't have a class action lawsuit against us. It's only arbitration. But I think experts agree that's not binding. You can still sue the hell out of them and should. And Equifax says it doesn't apply to the breach. It only applies to Trusted ID. Don't deal with Equifax. Don't make any agreements at all with Equifax, period.
A great example of just how a company, even still, I mean, it seems like when are we going to get to the point where companies of this size understand how to deal with stuff like this? I think we're still, it still feels like we're in the days where I can't remember a large company that's been affected, and so many of them have, that nailed their response to this kind of thing, right? And I think the other thing that's scary to me is the, like, over time, there's a profile that gets built up about each individual user depending on different hacks that happen, right? Maybe there's a part of your profile gets stolen over here, and it's just your mother's maiden name and your telephone number, and then another hack over here gets your social security number. And eventually there's an incremental thing that's happening here to users all over the place that I think is really scary. And at the same time, so many users are becoming less and less, they're becoming desensitized to these stories because it seems like there's one every month. And I think both of those things
almost
like,
every
freak
week.
Me out. Yeah. Yeah. Both of those things freak me out.
Well, I don't think it's a state secret how to secure data. Excuse me, but I think that we know how to do this. Have you ever heard of a breach of your data from Google or Facebook?
Yeah.
I feel like we know how to encrypt data, how to secure it. We don't know how the hackers got in. One of the stories I saw said that Equifax said they got in through their website, which bodes very poorly.
That's scary. This special site
they set up has security flaws of its own, and the JavaScript is the login name for the site. I mean, these guys are obviously inept. I agree with you, Ant. There should be some federal requirements for privacy and security for these companies. But maybe one of the reasons they haven't is that Equifax, along with all the others, is a big contributor to Republican congressmen, to lawmakers. They've, since the creation of the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Equifax has donated more than $500,000 in campaign cash, trying to get Republicans to put the CFPB out of business. The CFPB was created after the deplorable financial crisis of 2008 to protect Americans, to force disclosures. Equifax has been lobbying, for instance, to repeal the rule that requires them to be suable. They want to repeal the agency entirely.
The FTC has been on this too, right? I mean, the FTC has been trying. I think, you know, I've interviewed a few times former chairwoman Edith Ramirez, and you know, I think that the FTC has been trying to force change about this for a long time. They've been talking about data privacy for a long time, and the problem is, just like the FCC and the net neutrality debate, this stuff is really hard to do through the agency. It needs to happen through an act of Congress, quite literally, and for reasons that you're describing, Leo.
Congress is in the back pockets of companies like Equifax. Look at this bill, yeah. H.R. 2359. Barry Loudermilk of Georgia introduced this May 4th. To amend civil liability requirements under the Fair Credit Reporting Act to limit class action lawsuit payments to $500,000 with no punitive amounts. I mean, this is clearly something written by companies like Equifax and put through with their tame members of Congress to protect them against this kind of event. By the way, good news. There's a massive class action lawsuit that's been filed against Equifax. Was it $70 billion? Members of Congress, of course, have asked them to come in and testify. I just don't feel like Equifax has did the right thing in the first place protecting us, is done the right thing in the response to it, and is being forthright in any way about what information was leaked.
Yeah, who does Equifax answer to with regards to this? And secondly, why did they wait so long to release the information? And I know you have to have some type of investigation before you tell the press, we had a breach, because you want all of the facts to be there. But it took them a month to get the facts straight.
Yeah, it's more than a month.
Also, Also, if my security is breached, I want to be notified.
Yes.
I don't want to have to go to a website and ask and then sign away rights.
Somebody's saying this isn't the first time. This is the third time Equifax has been hacked. So I surely have
no problem calling you to offer you a bunch of things you don't want. You can robo-dial me and say, hey, you've been hacked, you know, something.
You have my number, Equifax. You have my number.
They do that. Yeah. They were hacked in 2015. It feels like there's no accountability at all.
Unbelievable.
In 2015, 15 million. Oh no, this was an Equifax. This was Experian. In 2015, Experian was hacked. 15 million customer records were exfiltrated. 143 million, pretty much as every adult in the U.S., as close as could be, which tells me that, they lost the entire database, right? So why are they saying, oh, don't worry, only 222,000 people lost the credit cards numbers were lost. I want to know a little bit more about that.
They probably in some ways, your credit card.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
In some ways, your credit card number is in some ways like the least valuable part.
Right.
At least to me, like I can call my credit card company
and
say,
you get a new one of those.
These charges are BS.
Yeah, good luck getting a new social. Car. That's fun.
Exactly.
So there's a couple of ways you can really sock it to them. my suggestion is you can do a fraud, put a fraud alert on your account that you have to renew every few months. Rules vary state to state on this, but that you usually have to renew every 3 months. And that means they have to notify you when anybody pulls a credit report on you. Even better, credit freeze. In some states, you have to pay for this as much as $10 to freeze your credit per reporting company. So that'd be $30 for the big three. And then to unfreeze it, and what you need to do if you want to get a loan, is another $10 each. So it's not cheap. Although, again, in some states, it's free. It depends on how the state legislature ruled on this. But a credit freeze means they can't give anybody your credit information and would completely eliminate their ability to make money, which is why they make this a very hard thing to do, but it might be worthwhile. If you go to the state of California, has a great page on credit freezing and fraud alerts, and they have links to all three to the credit freeze pages. You should be aware, though, that if you're going to get a credit freeze, the way you get it is by giving them all your information because they have to know it's you, right?
Right. So,
New York Times says three hacks of Equifax were disclosed by Equifax this year. Yeah, I don't even know where to begin. It's just it's appalling. It's as bad as you can get.
You used to rob banks because that's where the money is. You rob Equifax because that's where the Social Security numbers are.
Data is better than money nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah,
I agree with that. When I'm not doing any content creation, I'm writing SQL. And I think about all the data that I see during the day and just how valuable that is. It's way more valuable than me walking out there and finding somebody's, you know, wallet with a few bucks in it. You know, I have all of this private information that could lead to a bunch of other information that could, you know, bring me a wealth of money if I was that type of person, you know.
Wow. By the way, that's a hell of a skill. If you can write SQL queries, I'm sure there's some Russian hackers who would love to offer you a job.
When you said the website, it was how they got through. That was the first thing to come to my mind was a SQL injection.
Sure.
And I'm like, man, that's like the first thing you want to try to combat when you put your site up, you know?
Well, why is their database even connected to their public-facing website?
There you go.
I could think of a lot of things wrong with this picture. But again, we don't know we have scant information. All right. My blood pressure is going to go through the roof. Let's take a quick break. I'm going to breathe, Leo. Ant Pruitt is here from Tech Republic. He knows SQL. Watch out. He could be trouble. Also here from Codebreaker. Great to have Ben Johnson. And from PED 30, Philip Elmer DeWitt, the dean.
I don't know SQL.
You don't know SQL?
No.
Oh, it's easy peasy. I know MySQL. That's kind of like the same as a SQL query, right? Similar, right?
Similar.
Little Tommy drop tables. I remember that. Yeah. You've seen that XKCD comic, I'm sure.
I have.
Yeah. Why did you name your kid Little Tommy Drop Tables? Sanitize your inputs, kids. That's our message of the day. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software. If you are a freelancer, if you are a small business, if you're an entrepreneur, you know that, you know, you got in business for one thing, because something you love, photography or plumbing or SQL queries. You didn't get into business because you love sending invoices. That's the worst part of business, is billing. You know, you don't like paying bills, right? Who likes sending bills? It's just as bad. It's paperwork. Let FreshBooks do it. I did when I first found out about FreshBooks. It's been more than 10 years now. They had just started, and I was going to Canada once a month to do a TV show, and I had to invoice Rogers for my time and for my travel expenses. It was just a pain in the butt. You know, fire up Excel, you got to find all the receipts, put it was just a pain in the butt. And it was actually my co-host Amber MacArthur said, "Oh, there's this new company in Toronto, you're going to love them, FreshBooks." It made it really easy. All of a sudden, invoicing was a snap. And I noticed I got paid faster. Of course, you know, first thing you learn is if you don't send an invoice, you don't get paid at all. That's kind of fundamental.
Sounds like that adds up.
Yeah, it does. Don't tell anybody. I went 6 months because I just hated it so much, and I didn't send it. And then I sent 6 months with the invoices, and I got yelled at by the bookkeeper at Rogers. She said, "You can't do that. We don't, next time you do that, we're not going to pay you. You need to bill us every month." Okay. It turns out if you use FreshBooks, you get paid on average 11 days faster. Your invoices look pro. They're easier for them, too, because there is a button on the email, on the invoice, that says, "Pay Leo." Well, in your case, it'll say your name. Pay this bill, and they makes it easy for them. They can use all the online payment systems. You can set automatic payment reminders, automatic late fees. You can set up recurring invoices. You can even, if your customer agrees, set up automatic payments. So the whole thing can be friction-free. And then it turns out that because they're doing the invoicing, by the way, expenses are really easy too. You just take a picture of the receipt. It goes right in the invoice. You can keep track of time and hours. The website or the app, they're great. FreshBooks apps will do that for you automatically. Again, put it right into the invoice. But what's great about this is in the process of collecting your expenses and your accounts receivable and all of that, they've done your accounting. So you can go to this new FreshBooks dashboard, will tell you everything about your business. Like, how many freelancers know if they've made a profit so far this year? Usually you don't know whether you made money until tax time. Well, now you'll know exactly where you stand at any moment. It's so simple. It's so slick. It's so easy to use. I want you to try it absolutely free for 30 days. You get the entire FreshBooks deal free at FreshBooks.com/twit. You can see receipt attachments from your view invoices in the iOS app. You can log in. They always are adding features, which I really like. Because it's, you know, it's an online website plus the app, they're constantly adding new features. Employees can now log in on the FreshBooks mobile app for iOS, which makes it easier for them to take care of business. So if you have employees, you can bill for time by client, by projects. You can assign services to projects, have different rates for each service. Very flexible. FreshBooks was included in the Forbes Small Giants list for 2017, a huge honor. And I want you to try it free for 30 days. FreshBooks.com/twit. All I ask is when you fill out that form and they say, "How did you hear about us?" You just say, "Hey, I heard about it on Twit." FreshBooks.com/twit. It was a lifesaver for me. It'll be a lifesaver for you. FreshBooks.com/twit. This Week in Tech on the air. Let's see. Sad news. I am a big HTC fan. Remember the HTC One? That was like the best. With the front-facing speakers, solid
boom
aluminum
sound.
Body. Boom sound, right. HTC has had its worst quarter, I think, in 13 years. And now the rumor is Google may be buying HTC's smartphone division. You mentioned the Vive, Ant. That's a great VR headset, and I imagine they'll still be around. But the mobile division may be moving to Google, which would be interesting. Remember Google?
I had assumed. I had assumed HTC would double down on the Vive because it was...
That's their growth.
It was so great. Yeah. I mean, it again, I get sick just at the drop of a hat because of my ears, but I did the Vive experience and it just blew me away. And I didn't get any type of nausea or anything like that, but just the technology behind it and having those controllers and all of that to interface with it, it was just great.
I agree. And the partnership with Steam is really important too, because then you can get all the Steam apps. And the Vive is fantastic. I love it. But the smartphone business, they've really struggled. And I have to say, they might have deserved it. The last few, they had the One, and they kind of went downhill after that. And the last few phones I've used of HTC is very unimpressive.
Not great. Yeah.
The rumor is they are making the small Pixel 2. LG will make the big Pixel 2. It's not enough to save the company, and maybe that would be why Google would be interested in buying them. They did, remember, they bought Motorola, and that did not work out well. Google.
Yeah, I don't understand why the Google possibility here, because haven't we seen this before with Motorola?
Yeah, they bought Motorola in 2012 for $12.5 billion, sold it to Lenovo 3 years later or 2 years later for $3 billion.
But they kept the IP. They kept the intellectual property. There were a lot of patents. There were thousands of patents.
Some of it
had a bunch of patents. Okay. Motorola patents.
So some of the value.
But even still. What's the interest in HTC? Like, how does this make sense in a way that are they getting a bunch of IP?
Here's what's changed. Remember in 2012, Google was making the Nexus phones, and they weren't making, they were, as they do today, they were getting other companies to make them and brand them. Those were inexpensive phones that really looked like they were a developer platform. Like, this is the reference platform for Android. We don't expect anybody to really use it. But then the Pixel phones come along, and it really looks like Google has ambitions to be a flagship phone manufacturer. But they're not making them still. So who made the original Pixels? I forget. But it wasn't made by Google. It was made to Google's specifications. So it would make sense.
The original Nexus?
Well, the Nexus was made by a bunch of people. In fact, HTC. Yeah.
HTC had one.
Made one of them. Made the first one, I think. Samsung made some. The Nexus One, I think, was a Samsung phone. But I can't remember who made these Pixels. But anyway, it would make sense for Google if they say, well, we're going to now make a business out of Android devices. And they could reasonably do so because, as you pointed out, these are
Huawei. That's the name.
Huawei.
Yeah.
Huawei. Thank you, Burke in the chat room. And Ant, congratulations for going to the chat room. Most people are not brave enough to go into the chat room during the show. You're a brave fellow, but they haven't said anything bad about you. So that's
or cool. Ignorant.
Brave or ignorant, one or the other. So, no, the chat room's fine. They're not going to bite you. I could kind of see if this is okay, now it's a business for Google. Maybe we should own a manufacturer. I don't know.
You know, I have
go ahead, Ant.
I have a story about HTC, and it goes back to how I first started getting into content creation. Your friend Gina Smith gave me my first opportunity.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Gina Smith and Dr. Purnell was part of the
board. I was going to say that was a new domain, right? And Jerry wrote for a new domain. I didn't. So you worked with Jerry and Gina.
Sir.
Yeah.
And at the time, there was a time where HTC was reaching out to Gina and all of us for content creation for a blog that they were trying to market towards millennials. And right before we had that relationship put together, I had a piece published talking about HTC sort of losing its way with the smartphone, you know. And so it was a little awkward.
Nice one, Ant. Nice one, Ant. Good timing.
A little awkward in that meeting, but at the same time, I was right, you know, and they were pretty candid about it and spoke with me as far as what my opinions were. And they made great hardware for that time, but it just wasn't elevating or incrementing as fast as everybody else.
You were warning them rightly so. And I bet you this is right around the M1 came out and the Zoes.
This was right after the Zoes and that little re-camera thing.
I had a re. I loved that re.
The re was fine.
It streamed right to YouTube.
The re was fine.
And it's been straight downhill ever since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you were right, and I guess they appreciated your honesty.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it makes me sad because I really feel like HTC, they had a design language. They did make quality stuff. They just lost their way in some strange way.
You know, I give them credit for trying things just to see what happens. You know, with this latest phone, the squeeze technology, to activate the camera and things like that, that's something different. And
supposedly, that's going to be part of the new Pixel 2. Google's going to use the squeeze to launch the Google Assistant, which might work.
That would be a nightmare. That would be a nightmare for me. I already launched Google Assistant by mistake all the time.
Are you one of those tense people that's always like, you need to get a little squeeze ball?
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know why, but I already inadvertently get Google Assistant going. I don't even know how it happens. I'm not saying, okay, Google.
I trigger it all. Echo, so. Google, Siri, they all get triggered in my house. I can't watch TV without bloop, bloop, what, huh, bloop, bloop, all the time.
My audiobooks do that as I'm driving.
Yeah, drives me nuts. But it's just the way it is. Get ready. That's life in the future.
In the future,
everything answers everything. RF guy in the chat room is mentioning that HTC told him they didn't get the support from the chip companies, probably Qualcomm, Samsung. So they weren't able to get the chips that the big guys who could negotiate. And that happens, right? It's kind of like, speaking of chips, poker. When you are the chip leader in poker, you have a huge advantage just because you're big. When you're selling 80 million phones, you have a huge advantage. And it just kind of, it's a vicious circle. The rich get richer and the little companies kind of fade away. And I think HTC, that's just what's happening to them.
Yeah. Apple famously buys up the capacity of something that they need. It's kind of a pressure point. They'll buy up all the capacity and really squeeze everybody else. I got to say, I feel bad for the Android phone makers because they all use the same operating system. They end up competing on price, which is a race to the bottom. There's a reason that Apple, it's got 16% of the global market, but it takes home 85-90% of the profit in cell phones. So they're all struggling, and I'm not surprised that Motorola gets sold and they end up with Google that's got the money to keep them alive.
It's going
to
be Apple, Samsung. Huawei's still huge because they have the China market.
The Chinese manufacturers, because they have a huge market to play in, and there's a lot of cost advantages to working in that, where all the suppliers are all in the same place. They're competing very well with Samsung and Apple. They're beating Apple and Samsung in China, and that's enough to make a living. That's good market.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they got a market of a billion consumers. That's all it takes. Sell a few phones.
They haven't been as good as bringing it out. They're not selling as well outside of China.
No. It's bad for consumers though, because as it's a consolidation, it's inevitable. It's capitalism, right? You get consolidation, and a few big companies end up dominating. But we just don't get the innovation and the choice that we deserve. And at some point, nobody has headphone jacks anymore.
That's the eventuality,
right?
No,
that's what
headphone
happens.
Jacks.
It's devolution.
Yeah. And it's weird, too, that the headphone jack, the no headphone jack thing, I think is interesting to me because the effort there is to make it thinner. Right. And I just I don't know. Does the phone really need to get that much thinner that we lose the headphone jack
or battery life? That's another thing that's sacrificing, right?
Right.
For someone with really large hands, I need my phone to be substantial.
Yeah.
The whole trend of going smaller and thinner just bugged me at one point in time. And I'm glad that we have these, you know, 5.5, 5.7 inch devices nowadays versus the older ones, you know.
The most boring, most important innovation in smartphones, I think, that we're still waiting for is a legitimate battery life. Like that, you know, if you give me a, I will pay Apple prices. I will pay for two iPhones if you tell me my battery will last a week.
Oh,
and charge
good luck.
In 10 minutes.
Oh, dream on.
You know what I mean?
Let's do it.
There's no technology exists that will do that. Dream on. You can't even get my wristwatch doesn't last 12 hours.
Clear phone, you know?
Yeah, clear. If they can make it clear, make it last a week.
Somebody get Elon Musk on the line. Yeah. Let's get this in.
It'll have a little nuclear reactor in it or something like that. So ever since November, Facebook's been denying that Russians bought political ads on Facebook. On Wednesday, they admitted it. More than $100,000 worth of ads on hot-button social issues targeting voters. Many of the ads didn't refer to political candidates, but the purchases, we're starting to learn, were aimed at people who were Clinton voters. Facebook official says that these ads were purchased by a multitude of fake accounts created by the Internet Research Agency, which is a well-known kind of troll factory out of Russia. I almost said the Soviet Union. It kind of feels like it, doesn't it? It's a far part of their very broad disinformation efforts. It does really raise the issue. Facebook, after the election, said, we didn't have anything to do with that. Mark said, but I think we're learning more and more that Facebook wields immense power because of its ad platform, because of its vast usership in the United States and around the world. And this is concerning. It is. Now, we talked about this on Wednesday and This Week in Google, and we thought at the time that it wasn't illegal, but I do believe now, having looked into it, that it is illegal for a foreign government to try to influence elections by buying ads. That's not legal. So Facebook did violate federal law by selling those ads. They probably didn't know. They say Facebook is cooperating now with members of Congress. Staff members briefed Senate and House Intelligence Committees on Wednesday. Facebook's also cooperating with Robert Mueller, the special counsel. They wrote, "We have shared our findings with U.S. authorities investigating these issues. We'll continue to work with them as necessary." What is Facebook's responsibility? And did they know all along that they... Why didn't they only now find out that these ads were sold to Russian entities?
I wonder when you do Facebook ads, what's the process? You go on, you open up your account or whatever, and you sign in to say, "I want to purchase some ads." What are the questions that are being asked from the Facebook form to give you access to have ad placement on there? You know, I believe, is in the chat. He said, you know, they shouldn't have anyone doing ads for political reasons. But does Facebook even know when someone signs up? I mean, I could just go in there and say, "I want to do Aunt Pruitt ads," and they probably don't even care what the ads are. It just says Aunt Pruitt. I don't know. Anybody ever done this?
No, there is a they ask you how much you want to spend. You submit the ad, and then they have to approve it. And I don't know what their criterion on, but there is a step where some algorithm or some human approves the ad. Because you can't just put anything.
I think it's humans. I think it's humans. But I will also say that I've done this, and it does not take long.
Yeah.
For it to get
so
approved.
They're not looking
it's
real
hard.
Fast.
Yeah.
What really for someone who spends more time watching the White House, circle the drain than following Apple these days. What's interesting about the Facebook thing is that we've known that the Russians hacked Podesta's emails and got all this anti-Hillary stuff. Well, what we don't know is how they knew to direct it to the right precincts and to weaponize it is the jargon they use. And one of the theories is, and what Mueller is trying to find out, is did the Trump campaign operation, which had great research, feed it to the Russians and help them weaponize the thing. That they did.
They knew what precincts they needed to sway. Yeah.
Right.
Who knows better?
The Facebook thing is not dispositive because it's pretty easy for someone who doesn't know much about U.S. politics to guess at where to send stuff. You know, you know which states are. I don't know. It's fairly easy to target with Facebook's tools, and it may not require the sophistication of a Steve Bannon to know exactly where to send those things. We don't know yet.
New York Times has an interesting article about this kind of Russian troll farm. And an example, Melvin Reddick of Harrisburg, PA, a friendly-looking American with a backward baseball cap and a young daughter, you can see it in his profile picture, posted, these guys show hidden truth about Hillary Clinton, George Soros, and other leaders of the U.S., and a link to dcleaks.com. But there is no Melvin Reddick. He is a made-up character by Russian hackers. And this was the problem is, and I can understand, Facebook, look, there people have posed as me on Facebook. And it took me going to Facebook saying, that's not me, to get it down. They've got 1.5 billion users. This is a very difficult.
It's hard to filter 1 billion records, you know.
Yeah.
Facebook is reactive, when it comes to this kind of thing. And I think that's, to me, that's been over time covering this stuff, whether it's people impersonating other people. They have a big problem with this in India, for instance, of folks impersonating other people to get Facebook accounts and then say bad things about them. This is like I've talked to some people who are dealing with this. I think Facebook at a basic level is reactive, whether that's whatever it is that violates their terms and conditions,
necessary.
Whether it's violent video.
What are you going to do? Right. I think that's necessary. I don't know how they can be proactive.
I guess I don't either. But I think that's what we're seeing to a certain degree is because of that, is because Facebook, can't be proactive about it, maybe.
Right.
And that's why we see this stuff after the fact. This point in the New York Times story about, the company said it also found another 2,200 ads that were, bought in America and were sort of more vaguely related to politics than the more direct advertising stuff. And they hadn't really figured out yet whether or not those were part of this larger effort.
Right.
I think they're trying to figure it out. Maybe that's normal, but that's part of what we're seeing.
Yeah,
right.
They do. Yeah. Let's take a break. One more segment to go. Kind of the stories that filtered to the bottom of the rundown this week. Amp Pruitt is here from Tech Republic, from Codebreaker, the podcast. Is it codebreaker.com, Ben Johnson?
Codebreaker.codes. That is the show. And also, yeah, and I leaked, I should have said before, I leaked to you, we were talking about leaks, I leaked to you what I'm doing next when I saw you. So, you've gotten the leak.
It's safe to leak to me because I have a brain like a sieve. Although I make a point of never signing NDAs, embargoes, I don't agree not to reveal information because not only do I forget stuff, but I forget that I agreed not to say stuff. And I'm talking all the time. So you can't
trust
me.
You made no promises to me.
I make no promise, but you're in luck because I remember nothing. I was drinking Podcaster's Punch at the time, was I not?
I was too, I think. I think we were both.
The hotel made us
a
special punch for podcasters.
Leo, in the chat room, Old Army says that two more feet of water and Irmer will be in the house and he'll have to leave the program.
Old Army.
Hurry up, please.
Old Army, I am so sorry. And by the way, I haven't said anything about Irma. Right on the heels of Harvey in Texas, now this in Florida, and I know we have a great many listeners in both areas. We have a great many listeners in the Caribbean islands, in the Virgin Islands, the British Virgin Islands. The only place we don't have listeners is Cuba, but everywhere else, please, I hope you're safe, and our thoughts and prayers are with you. And Old Army, stay safe. I hope you have a ladder up to the roof. Yikes. That's
go,
terrifying.
Go on the roof. It's not in
yeah,
the attic. Not,
yeah, on the roof.
Yeah.
Codebreaker.codes if you want
yes, sir.
To listen to Ben's great podcast. Or it could be Penn's great podcast. I don't know. It could be any.
Penn's great podcast.
Yeah. And what do you talk about on here?
We talk about a lot of different stuff. I pitch it as the Twilight Zone meets radio journalism.
Love it.
So, if you've seen Black Mirror, if you've seen Mr. Robot,
nice.
This is the kind of stuff we take a kind of a dark edged look at technology. At least the first season, we asked the fundamental question about different kinds of technology. The question was, is it evil? We covered everything from email killing our productivity to internet porn to actually data selling, which we've been talking about today. In the second season, the question was, can it save us? And we talk about everything from sort of climate change based technology or technology rooted in solving climate change issues to virtual reality, augmented reality, and technology that are helping refugees in the refugee crisis in Syria, things like that.
Fascinating. So, and you do this really cool thing, which is you can listen to next week's podcast if you crack the code.
Yeah, we make it bingeable, like a Netflix show, when we release each season by hiding a secret code in every episode.
So clever.
It's fun.
I love that idea. That's really
cool. Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
Codebreaker.codes. Is that
yes,
right?
Sir.
C-O-D-E-S?
Yep.
I didn't even know there was a codes DLN. T-D-L.
Yeah. We got one.
Wow. Codes. I like it. Yeah. Also, of course, the legendary Philip Elmer DeWitt, PED30.com, will be skying to Cupertino any minute now. Get ready for the Apple event. Our show today brought to you by Tracker. The Tracker. I have a Tracker story. We went to a concert on Friday night, and I thought I lost my keys at the bar next door. I was patting my pockets. I can't find my keys. So I went to the bar next door. Did you find any keys? The good news is my keys have a Tracker Pixel attached. And I was looking on the Tracker, and I said, well, it's around here somewhere. And then I remembered, oh, yeah, I could press... I could tap the button on my phone and the alarm on the Tracker will go off. I press the button. I'm in the bar. I'm thinking, oh, they're here somewhere. And then I realize, oh, they're in the hidden pocket in my Scotty vest shirt. Never mind. But even if you lose your keys in your shirt, you can find them again with the Tracker. It's a coin-sized tracking device, pairs with your phone, and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. You check the couch, check the kitchen, you check the pockets. On average... all of us spend as much as 50 minutes a day, according to Newsweek, searching for stuff we know we own, we know we have, we just can't find it. You look in the fridge. You ever look in the fridge for your glasses and stuff? Yeah, because I know I must have absentmindedly. You look in the peanut butter jar. Well, you don't have to look anywhere. You can use the Tracker. 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything with their first tracking device. And they've done it again. The new Tracker Pixel is out. That's what I have on my keys. It has a LED all around it that will light up, makes it easy to find stuff that's, fallen under the bed or whatever. It's the lightest Bluetooth tracking device in the market. But even though it's light, it still has a replaceable battery. I love them for that because unlike other trackers, when the Tracker battery dies after a year, you can replace it, not throw it away. I put trackers on everything, on my keys, on my briefcase, in my car, in my luggage, on my bike. I don't want to lose anything. You can pair up to 10 trackers to your smartphone. You can share with other people's smartphones. You can have family find things time. You get a 90 decibel alert. That's what I got that helped me find my tracker. If you lose your phone, you press the button on the tracker, and your phone rings, even if it's silenced. You can even locate your item if it's miles away because Tracker has the best crowd locate network in the world with more than 5 million trackers out there. Anytime, just if you want to play with it, if you've got a tracker, turn on the notifications. And anytime somebody walks by that's running the software, you'll get a notification. Oh, I just saw your device. I just saw your device. It's a mind-boggling because there are people everywhere with Tracker software. It's so fantastic. Look at the dots on the map. You'll never lose anything again. Go to thetracker.com and enter the promo code TWIT. You'll save 20% on any order. Pick up the Tracker Bravo, the Tracker Pixel. Get a few extra accessories. You can put it on your pet. They have a special waterproof case you can put it in. It's awesome. The Tracker, T-H-E-T-R-A-C-K-R. Thetracker.com. Use the promo code TWIT and save 20% from the Tracker. All right. Well, we're going to wrap things up here. You guys have been working hard. I think somebody's dying of a cough. Was that you, Ann? Are you okay?
Oh, no,
it's me.
It was you? All right.
Well, yeah, it's me.
All right. Did you get some whiskey? That's what's saving Ann's voice. What, Ann?
How large are those trackers? I've been considering it drone. I guess they're about the size of a poker chip.
I've lost mine. No, it's in my... Yeah, I know exactly what it is. It's in my
own. Need a tracker for your tracker.
There's the Tracker Bravo is anodized aluminum, very light to be appropriate for a drone. It's the size of a quarter, but the Pixel's even smaller and lighter. And so it's the size of a button almost. I mean, a little bigger, but it's very small. And it would be perfect for... In fact, did put one on my drone. I did everything. I put the FAA registration number. I put my phone number. I know I'm going to lose this sucker someday.
I like the idea of having something audible like that because yes. I've crashed a few times, and the GPS does a decent job of getting close to where the thing went down.
Yeah,
but I like that audible feedback would be really nice.
Yes, it's. I've lost my drone in the grass, and I know it's here somewhere.
All right.
And if it was making the noise, here we go. So this is the Tracker Pixel. It's not very big.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's my size of a dime. Nah, maybe a nickel.
How long does the battery last?
That depends. So it's Bluetooth LE, so it's low energy. So it can last as long as a year. But I turn on all the two-way separation stuff. So like if you leave your keys behind, your phone honks. If you leave your phone behind, your keys honk. And that uses up more juice. But the thing is, it's just one of those I think is a CR2030 battery. I've got a dozen of them. So maybe every 3 to 6 months I'll replace it.
Oh, you can replace
it. Can you attach it to your cat?
Yes, you can. This is fine for a cat.
Okay, good. Safe for a cat. That's all I need.
Safe for your cat. I'm sad to say silently and without notice, without fanfare, Oracle laid off its entire Solaris tech staff. Last week, really the end of life of Solaris and the last, pretty much the last of Sun's products at Oracle. Oracle really bought Sun for one reason only. They wanted the Java rights so they could sue Google for billions. That was it. That was the real reason. I guess it's important to mention it because Solaris was so, but I don't think it had a huge impact these days. Amazon's looking for a second headquarters, and this is a bonanza for somebody. It will invest $5 billion plus, hire 50,000 employees. So they've gone around the country asking cities to bid for HQ2, and you can bet a lot of cities are into it and interested. Amazon told Seattle they're going to have 12 million square feet by 2022. It pretty much owns downtown Seattle, 8 million square feet with 33 buildings. There was a really interesting graphic in the Times where they said, forget it, Amazon, we'll tell you exactly where you should go. And they narrowed it down to Denver. I'm sure Denver was happy to hear that. I would like Amazon to move to Petaluma. You have instant access to the TWIT network. Power hardly ever goes out. We haven't had a hurricane in years, and it never snows.
They're trolling for tax breaks, Leo. Oh, you got something to give them?
I can't help them with tax breaks. You're right, of course. It's all about the tax breaks, isn't it?
That was my first thought. I was thinking about GE going to Boston, and I was like, and then there was Foxconn deal?
Oh, yeah, they're in Wisconsin.
Whatever it is.
Is it Wisconsin or Minnesota? I can't remember.
I can't remember either, the tax breaks, I feel like these kinds of deals always end up not being, it's like building a new stadium or something. It's like, they're like, the jobs. And then like 5 years later, you're like, the government just gave them a bunch of tax breaks and money to move to a place. And it's not actually that much better. I could be wrong. Obviously.
No, do the math. Foxconn's going to create 13,000 jobs in Wisconsin and they're getting a $3 billion tax incentive for that. Those are expensive jobs.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money to pay for 13,000 jobs.
Yeah.
I figured Amazon would get in the backyard of UPS, like go to Louisville or somewhere, because there's a large airport right there too.
Right.
You know, I figured it'd be a lot more efficient.
I don't think, though, they're worried about product shipping from this new headquarters. Really, it's manpower. It's personnel. It's smart people. They want somewhere where so the cost of living has to be fairly low. Of course, they want the tax breaks. But I think it's more office workers than fulfillment. Yeah,
they've got somebody said Detroit. I thought that was kind of an interesting.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Detroit could use it.
Yeah.
Give them some life, you know.
Don't use, if you have a AT&T U-verse, you might want to check your modem. There, it's unclear whether Aris, who makes the modem AT&T U-verse uses, or AT&T introduced some horrific security flaws into these modems that allow anybody, in fact, I'm sure it's happening already, to log into your modem, literally replace the firmware with their own custom firmware. Complete control of your modem. There are 5 flaws. You can SSH into the modem from anywhere because the SSH passwords are hard-coded. I can go on and on. You can run a shell. It's not a great shell. It's C shell, but I think you'll live with it, which allows you to... I mean, you just have absolute control. You run as root with a shell. Just log in. Have fun, kids. Aris and AT&T... I guess we'll have to fix this. Aris says we're conducting an investigation and we'll take any required actions.
does it mention who brought it to AT&T's attention?
Yeah. And well, it's an interesting story. It was a company called NoMotion, an analyst there named Joseph Hutchins. Normally, as you know, when security researchers find a vulnerability, they wait 6 months, 90 days. They give the company a chance to fix it. They said these vulnerabilities are so severe, and Aris has such a terrible history of repairing vulnerabilities like this, they released it immediately. They said, you know what, we're going to tell everybody now because this is such a horrific threat, and we believe that bad guys already know, so we think users better know right away. So that is kind of a violation of the traditional protocol for this kind of stuff.
I remember I had an Aris device at one time, and a buddy of mine, Charlie Hoover, gave me such a hard time about it. I didn't know.
Charlie's great. Yeah.
Charlie, he schooled me on it.
Yeah. Ars Technica, Dan Gooden, says hackers are lying in wait. They've already infiltrated our grid, and they've got basically an on-off switch, and they're just going to wait until they need it. Where are the hackers from? Well, we don't know, but it's pretty much well thought that they're the same Russian guys who turned the power off in the Ukraine for a few hours just to demonstrate.
Yep. That seems right.
Yep. Nothing more to say here except I hope you have battery backup.
And make grids dumber.
Yeah, there may be a little too... Well, if you're going to make a grid smart, please don't connect it to the public internet.
Exactly.
Who thought that was a good idea?
Whatever you do, don't ask Equifax what to do about it. That's the
ask Equifax how do you secure your data? And we'll end with this note. I'm a big fan of Tech Dirt, Mike Masnick. Mike had the temerity to call out a guy who says I invented email when I was a teenager in 1979. Mike said that's not true. He was immediately sued by Shiva Ayudara. He says he invented email in the late 70s, even though I think many of us were using email before then. Tech Dirt called him a liar and a charlatan. Ayudara sued him in January 2017 for libel. On Wednesday, U.S. District Judge F. Dennis Saylor said, because it's impossible to define precisely and specifically what email is, Ayudara's claim that is incapable of being proven true or false. And furthermore, one person may consider a claim to be fake if any element of it is not true or if it involves a slight twisting of the facts. So there's no libel here. The case has been thrown out. We don't know if he will appeal. We do know he will appeal. Here's a update to Gooden's article. False speech is not protected by the Constitution. says Ayodare's attorney, Charles Harder. You may have heard his name before in context, in another context. Tech Dirt's false and malicious speech about Ayodare should receive no legal protection, and we will appeal. And
false speech, it sounds like a lot like the people who scream fake news.
Fake news. It's false speech.
False speech.
False speech.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
good for Tech Dirt, though.
The judge did deny a separate motion to countersue under California's anti-slap law, which allows him to recover his extensive legal fees to defend himself. So Mike is out of pocket. There was, you know, I don't know how much of it is his money, how much of it was from a legal defense fund. There was a legal defense fund for him. I support journalism.com. It's not too late to help Mike Masnick out. Even though he's won this case, the costs are huge. And by the way, I'd just like to let everybody know, I invented email last night in my jammies. And if you say otherwise, you're in trouble, boy.
Fake speech.
<That's awesome. laughs> Fake speech. Fake speech. Well, I think we've come to the end of this fabulous, gripping edition of This Week in Tech. And if it was gripping at all, it was because of our great panel. So nice to have two new people in here. Aunt Pruitt, we're going to have you back soon. It's great to have you. Give us a plug. Thank you, we read you on Tech Republic. Where can I find your photos and your drone work?
Sure. Check me out on Twitter at @Ant_Pruitt. Instagram is actually @AntPruitt, not underscore. But better yet, go over to my YouTube channel and subscribe. You know, it's all about trying to create and dominate.
And Clemson for life, baby.
Clemson for life.
AntPruitt.com. AntPruitt. Yeah, thank you. Pruitt.
That's my Squarespace site.
Ah, nice job. It's beautiful. And a lot of pictures of Clemson football, but also high school football. Your son's playing, and I love it.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. It's great.
Thank you, sir.
It was great having you. Come back soon.
Thank you. Same goes
to you, Ben Johnson. Your first time on the Big Shoe, but I hope you will be back, depending on what job you take on Monday. If you're working for the NSA, I can't promise you a seat.
It's great to be here. Like I said, I've been a longtime fan of the show. I was honored to be asked. I'd love to come back if you'll have me. And
of course,
I'll just say that what I'm doing on Monday has something to do with a website they call the front page of the internet. So
ooh.
if you can work your way through that, then you'll get a sense of my next podcast.
Are you going to Baston there?
Sweet.
Are you in Baston? Where are you now?
Yeah. I'm at my parents' house, actually.
Yeah.
In Western Massachusetts.
That's because you had to evacuate because of Hurricane Irma.
Did your parents have that
nice sound blanket you've got hanging behind you?
This is going to go on their bed when this is over.
Very honest. Great to have you, Ben. Good luck at the front page of the internet. That's awesome. Codebreaker.codes for his fabulous podcast. And, of course, PED30.com is a place to go to find Philip Elmer DeWitt, who will be the first to let us know what Apple does with iPhone X.
And hopefully have a YouTube video of everybody walking in.
I thought you were going to stream on Facebook. Make up your mind, man.
YouTube.
YouTube. You're going to do YouTube Live. You're going to stream it from your phone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. What I'm going to try to do.
Awesome.
I'm in Western Mass as well. Where are you?
Oh, man, I'm in Amherst.
Oh, I'm in Greenfield. We're like 30 minutes away.
I'll meet you in Sunderland.
Okay. Actually, Western Mass is gorgeous. That's where Tanglewood is, right? And yeah my grandmother.
You're thinking of the Berkshires.
It's a little further west. This, a little further.
Even what farther.
We call Western Mass is
it's
is
Eastern
like
New York.
Connecticut Valley.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
The Berkshires. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been and spent some time there. My grandmother had a house in Western Mass as well.
Come out, do a twit from here, man.
I should. We'll be here. The leaves are going to change any day now.
That's right. We got cider donuts waiting for you.
Love it. I could live on cider and donuts. We do This Week in Tech every Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific for us, 6 p.m. Eastern for them. That'd be 2200 UTC for the rest of you listening around the world. You can do the math. You can watch us live at twit.tv/live or Well, if you do, by the way, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. That's a fun place to be. And every once in a while, one of our panelists will actually go in there, brave the lion's den, as Ant did this week. Nice.
This is like the nicest chat room, by the way, I've ever
been a part of. They are on their best behavior. Did I say it's on Saturdays? I'm an idiot. It's Sunday, right? Okay. 3 p.m.
Screensavers on Saturdays.
Ant knows. Screensavers Saturdays, Twit on Sundays. If you can't watch live because Leo's confused about the date and time, just go to the website, twit.tv, and download a copy. We have lots of episodes there. Search for Jerry Pournelle. You can find one of the 20 episodes of Twit he appeared on. There's also two great triangulations with Jerry where he talks about his life and time. So those would be fun to listen to again. You can also get our show by subscribing. There's so many great podcast clients out there. And if you subscribe, you'll get every episode. It'll be ready for you Monday morning on your way to work. Overcast, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, Slacker, iTunes, you know. And even some great Twit apps. There are lots of great Twit apps. Subscribe and you won't miss an episode. Thanks for being here. Thanks to our studio audience. Great bunch here. If you want to be in the studio, all you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair for you. I will see you in three weeks. I'm going to take the week off, next couple of weeks off. Jason Calacanis will be our host next week, and he's put together a crazy-ass panel. I don't know. I should probably not even say, because I want you to be surprised. But do tune in next Sunday. And then it's Becky Worley the Sunday following, right? Becky Worley is going to be my host, and I'll be back October 1st on Twit. I'll see you in a few weeks. Thanks for joining us. Another Twit! Is in the can. Bye-bye.